Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. It's our morning talk program. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also pleased to have here on the program once again Scott Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. Once a month now for a while, we've been doing these programs on a Monday to give you the chance to call in and ask home maintenance questions. Can be just about anything that goes into the house. Could be an issue with basements or attics, roofing, siding, doors, windows, insulation, heating, cooling. I'll stop. You get the idea. Any of those things, you have a problem, something needs to be fixed, you're thinking about making some changes, you need some advice, you give us a call, and I know Scott will do his best to help you out. We have somebody ready and waiting, and we'll get to them right in a second as soon as I give the phone number, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line. Go to anywhere you can hear us, 800-222-9455 at any point here. Pick up the telephone, give us a call, and talk with us. Well, thanks very much for being here. We start out here with someone in Urbana, and this is line number one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Hi. I've got a question about a whole house fan. This is it's installed in the second floor ceiling in the hallway, and we like to use it to draw in cool air in the evening. The only problem we have is that it's kind of noisy, almost too noisy to keep it on during the night so that we can sleep. I don't know how old it is. I'm guessing it's certainly over 10 years, maybe 20 years. And I wonder if you know about newer models. Do they make them more fairly quiet so that they don't disturb you when you're trying to sleep at night?
Well, is it? General rule, they're relatively noisy. They move large quantities of air to work properly, and therefore it does make it a bit of an issue to try and keep them quiet. If it makes a thumping noise, quite often you've got a bad belt, and the belt sits there and hits on a bad spot. So occasionally putting a new belt in the unit will work. But for the most part, just the sheer volume of air that they move, they are relatively noisy.
I see. So it's no improvement in that design. Yeah, there's no belt noise or anything indicating a mechanical problem. It is just, it sounds like an airplane taking off. So I guess we'll have to live with it.
Sometimes things can be done with cracking a couple of the more windows, get some more air in. Occasionally I found there was not enough attic ventilation to let the air out of the attic once it got up in there, and it kind of created a reverberation. You actually got up in the attic area, and you could feel a pulse from the fan up in the attic because there wasn't enough outgoing air. So that's one thing you might want to check. Maybe you need another button vent or two to help get rid of some of that air. Kind of depends on how much ventilation you've got now.
Yeah, well, we usually keep plenty of windows open, but the fan blocks the only access to the attic, so I haven't been up there I can't get up there to test that. But from the outside, you can see that the only ventilation leading out of the attic would be along the very peak of the roof where, I don't know what you would call it, but that top layer of...
The ridge vent.
Yeah, I guess okay, that's what you would call it.
If you've got a ridge vent, you should have adequate air out of the attic.
I see. All right. Thanks very much.
Okay. All right.
Very good. Thank you. Let's continue. And the next person here in line is in Bradley, Illinois, on our toll-free line number four. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
Gentlemen, thank you very much for this program.
Sure.
Sometime over the years, a time or two, you have named a type of system to keep leaves out of the gutters. And I can't remember what kind it was or where they were available up in our area.
Okay, well, I don't have a specific list of installers or availability in your area, and there's about five or six different types. And that's one of those things that my father has been mailing out information is something we try not to give too many brand names out over the radio. But there are several different types of leaf guards or gutter guards or screening. As a general rule, the really cheap ones don't work, and the really expensive ones aren't necessarily worth it. So trying to find something in the middle of the road that will at least help you out. The gutter guards still are not 100% answer because they still get some dirt in there, and it does make it a little bit more difficult to clean the gutters because then you have to remove or lift or at least clean around where the gutter guards are, but you don't have to do it anywhere near as often.
Yeah. Yeah. What kind is that middle of the road sort? Does it have a name?
Well, like I say, there's a couple of different brand names, and there are some new ones that I've seen coming out. Probably your best bet would be to give me a call over at the office, and I'll send you a list of items that seem to be working relatively well.
Okay. What is your number?
That would be area code 217.
Okay.
356.
356.
5048.
5048.
Correct.
Yeah, and I have another question.
Mm-hmm.
Some years ago, we painted our kitchen table, and it dried 99 9/10%, and it's still dried 99 9/10%. What can we do with that to get a dry paint surface on that table?
Well, it kind of depends on what prevented it from drying in the first place, whether it was the wrong type of paint or whether an oil-based paint was put over top of a latex paint, or what exactly was the problem. I assume it's a wood table of some sort, so most likely a good coating of a varnish or a shellac would probably seal it up pretty well.
It's peeling in places, and I don't know, can we sand it down?
If it's a wood table, most definitely.
Okay, we'd have to take it all the way down.
No, you just sand it enough that it takes a shine off of it, and it gets a kind of a matte or a satin type finish, and that's enough of a groove in the surface for the new paint to bond to, so that you don't get the peeling.
And a spot where some wine spilled is definitely dark.
If you sand it down far enough to get underneath your clear coat, you can quite often bleach a little bit of that out. Usually, using a little bit of borax soap or something like that, you can usually get it to come a little bit lighter. But if it's really stained down deep into the wood, there's not much you're going to do about the stain.
Yeah, well, no, it's just as though the wine sort of ate the top layer of paint.
Okay, then sanding should be fine because that'll take off the whatever the varnish was. It sounded like the wrong type of varnish was used, or the varnish that was used was...
Well, it's painted white. We used a white enamel.
Okay.
And that's and it just never...
My guess is your white enamel went over the top of an original varnish or an original shellac, and it didn't bond properly.
Yeah. Okay, all right. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks for the call. Just real quick on the subject of gutter guards, what's the price range? Say, you know, what
you can buy a real inexpensive kind of an expanded plastic screen that just kind of slips into the gutter. I believe they're selling for about $8 a roll for 50 feet. Or you can go with, I believe one of the products is a gutter helmet, and you're looking at anywhere from $6 to $8 a foot installed.
Hmm.
But they are something that does take a professional installer to get up there and screw it down into the roof. So,
right.
I mean, there's a pretty
so
wide...
So truly there's a big spread between the least expensive solutions and the most expensive.
Correct.
And it sounds also what you're saying is that the most expensive ones aren't necessarily...
They work for most cases, but there again, there is no universal one-size-fits-all.
Mm-hmm.
If the steeper the pitch on the roof, the less some of the rollover type work. Basically, what that is, the rollover, what they do is they take a piece of metal and they make a curve on it so that the water doesn't break surface tension. It rolls back down underneath, but any leaves... sticks, debris, things like that will slide off the edge of the roof. But a flatter pitch roof, those types don't always work quite as well because the debris doesn't pick up enough speed. It doesn't have the proper angle of trajectory to slide off the roof, in which case something that's got a louver on it that you can lift up and clean, because a lot of the high-end ones are literally screwed down to the roof, and so to clean into the gutter, you've got to get up there and unbolt them and unscrew them. There are types that have some clips or hinges that hold them onto the gutters to make them a little bit easier to clean out when they may not hold or may not keep everything out, but they're a lot easier to clean out once you get some debris in there and you need to get up there.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, like I say, there's a whole bunch of different styles.
All right. We've got some other callers here. Our guest is Scott Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. He's on the program here once a month on a Monday. We talk about home maintenance, and your questions are welcome. 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Next, we'll talk with someone in Urbana. This is line number two. Hello.
Hello. I have a problem that involves a dishwasher and the countertop. It's a custom counter. It's a couple of inches lower than normal, and it would appear the original dishwasher was installed before the tile was put down on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And now it won't come out, of course. It seems I'd have to remove about 12 tile, and no one seems to want to do that small job. How difficult would it be for me to get the tile out, and is it possible to get the tile out without breaking them?
Generally speaking, ceramic tile is put down in a mortar bed or a mortar base, so it can be quite difficult to get it down. If they used a mastic, then quite often they can get popped up, but if they've set it in mortar, it's pretty much down there.
I think it's mastic. It seems to be a black material around it.
Around the outside, yeah. Well, that's the color of the grout.
Oh.
The grout doesn't necessarily indicate what they set the tile in.
No, I mean where the base of the old dishwasher was taken away. It seems that underneath the tile there's black material. The grout is white.
Okay. Oftentimes, if a mastic is used, you can get them to come up. It kind of depends on which mastic. Some of the mastics lose strength as they get older. Others just get dried to where they're so tight and brittle that everything breaks when you try and take it apart.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time I found that if there's already a ledge there where the tile is missing and the dishwasher drops down into it. It's usually easier to find the five or six screws on the countertop that hold it down to the cabinets and take those screws out, and then you can lift the countertop up enough to get the dishwasher to slide back in and fall into the slot, and then let the cabinet or the countertop come back down on top of it. Because usually those countertops are not bolted securely. There's usually one screw for every set of cabinets.
That sounds a better way to go if I can do that.
Yeah, it'll be a matter of opening the drawers or pulling the top drawers out and looking to see if there's a screw that goes up from the stile on the front
mm-hmm.
up into the bottom of the cabinet. And usually there's only like one or two at the most per cabinet. So unless it's a really long cabinet run, there may only be five or six screws that hold that cabinet down or the countertop down to the cabinet. So you might be able to just lift them up enough to slide the dishwasher in.
This is next to the sink. And there actually aren't any drawers. There are doors that open on the side under the sink, so maybe I could get to it there.
Mm-hmm. And even where the sink goes, there usually, see the sink, they cut a pretty good sized hole in the countertop there, so there's nothing there securing the countertop right to the cabinet. So again, even with mm-hmm. with a kitchen base cabinet, there's usually one or two screws holding things on.
If I do have to take the tiles up, what tools would I use?
I'd start with a putty knife and work from there. Something relatively sharp and flexible that isn't going to try and – something you can kind of tap underneath it to break the bond at the mastic.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't want something so thick that it has to break the edge of the tile when it comes up. So
right.
a good thin putty knife ought to be a good starting point.
That I can certainly find. And I do have instructions for getting tiles out where you actually break them. I'd like to avoid that if I can. But
because finding replacements, of course, is not as easy. The color won't match exactly.
Yes, and these may be 50-year-old tile. Seems impossible. The dishwasher could be that old, but it's a very old.
I would start probably with looking to find out where the attachment screws are on that countertop and see if we can't lift the countertop and drop it in that way.
Okay, I'll give that a try. Thanks very much.
All right, very good. On to the next caller, and this is someone also in Urbana, and line three. Hello.
In response to the question about quieting a whole house fan, we have one that has two speeds.
Mm-hmm.
And when we need it quieter, we use the lower speed, and when we need to move a lot of air, we use the higher speed. We also have it on a timer switch. It's a dial thing, and so if we're starting it up before we go to bed or as we're going to bed, we set it for a small chunk of time, and it turns itself off, so we don't have to listen to it for a long period of time. But it does cool things off, and it moves some, and you can play with the windows, so it's moving air over your bod, as you're trying to cool down to get to sleep on a hot, muggy evening. We tend to use it more than we do the air conditioning. It's really quite nice. So that's that one. And with regard to the gutter covers, we've used several of the, I think it's called Gutta Guard. I recommend having a pair of vice grip pliers to hold on to the little clips so that you're not likely to drop them down onto the ground as you're putting them in. And also leaving off, I made a mistake when we put them on initially of leaving a those little wire expanded aluminum downspout strainers in the downspouts. And there's some small debris would get inside the gutters, and if I don't have those little downspout protectors in the gutter, then the small debris just washes through if it manages to get around the edge. And they've worked for the most part pretty well. You do have to make sure you don't have any way that birds can get in there, because sparrows like to build nests. So if you leave anything open at the ends, they will find it, and they will build a nest, and they will block your gutter.
Yeah, they find a little covered area in there.
Yeah.
There's several different types of controls for fans. The thing you have to watch with fan controls is that sometimes motors are not necessarily designed to have multiple speeds. So it kind of depends on what type of electric motor they've got on that particular fan unit. Because I've seen anything from an infinite adjustable variable resistor, so you can change the fan speed to anything you want, to 2, 3, and even 4 speed fans. But a lot of it has to do with the type of electric motor, so it's something that you don't just run out there and change the switch on.
Right, right. You'd have to have the right kind of fan. A good point. That's what I was referring to. I'm glad you clarified that there was even more variability than what we have. Ours is, I don't know, 13, 15 years old. Thanks.
All right, thank you.
And again, to line number 1, and this is also Urbana. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
We have plastic ducts from the furnace to the vents. And I don't like them. They were here when we bought the house, and I would prefer to have the old sheet metal kind of ducts. So I'd just like to hear what you have to say about how they function, how they are at air transfer, how they are about storing dust and all their little wrinkles. Just some advice on them.
Okay, well, the plastic flex duct, usually what it is it's actually 2 layers of plastic. There's an inner liner, then there's a wire form which has an insulation wrapped around it, then an exterior plastic liner. About the only problem I've really found with the ductwork is if it's in the attic and somebody were to step on it, kneel on it, or something crawling through there, they can bend the wire form and they can crush them down.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a lot of sunlight getting into the attic through a large vent or a window in an attic, I've actually seen the sunlight deteriorate the plastic.
Ah.
In crawl spaces, generally they do pretty well unless you've got an installer who did the loop-de-loop deal where they end up with a lot of sags and a lot of droops, didn't put much support underneath it. That can kind of restrict the airflow. I do kind of like the insulated ducts because they do exactly that. They insulate much better than the old metal ductwork. You could get quite a bit of air loss and heat transfer through the old metal ductwork through your crawl space or through your attic areas. So from that standpoint, they are more efficient. But you have to watch to make sure that they were installed such that they don't have any kinks in them. Again, if they're in the attic where they've been crushed, because then they can add some air restriction.
All right, I guess I'll just learn to love them, and they're not as bad as
I thought. I take it they're in a basement ceiling.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah. It works relatively well. The metal ducts in a basement work fairly well because in a basement, a little bit of heat loss to the basement from the system doesn't hurt anything. It keeps your basement warm.
Right, right.
But in crawl space areas and attic areas and such, actually those flex ducts are probably one of the better ways of keeping your ductwork insulated and more efficient.
Okay. Then that's not as big a problem as I thought. Thank you very much.
Right, very good. Thank you. And another call here, also in Urbana, line number 2. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi. This is probably not the right time of the year to ask, but I just had a sump pump discharge put in, and I'm wondering about freezing problems in the winter. It's a PVC line, comes out of the house a couple of feet, and then there's an extension, another larger PVC pipe connected to that about 10 feet away from the house.
It definitely can be an issue. It's not all that uncommon to find where one will block up, particularly at the end. You need to make sure that the PVC pipe has a reasonably good slope to it.
Yeah, so there's a pretty good drop all the way from the inside of the house to where the end of the pipe is.
Okay, so that way we don't collect water in the pipe. Also, usually it helps if when it comes right out of the house, it has an immediate elbow, either a 45 or a 90 drop down to.
It does have that.
Okay. That'll help quite a bit as well. Hopefully, with a little bit of luck, once we reach freezing temperatures, we don't have water coming into the basement.
Well, actually, for some reason, the water table must be higher because the pump runs even in the wintertime, not as often as in the warm weather, but it still runs even December and January.
In that case, you may need to reroute it to where it actually comes out through the foundation 8 or 10 inches below grade and runs underground to a point where we can get it to the gravel bed. The discharge, you know, even if you bring it to the surface, if you were to dig a relatively good-sized hole, say about 3 feet diameter by about 3 foot down, and fill it with a loose river of gravel, a wash gravel, and put your downspout in or your discharge into that, that even when it freezes, it's not going to freeze deep enough to cause a problem and allow that water to soak down in through the gravel.
So you want the pipe that's coming out of the house below the frost line? Is that the idea?
Basically, yes. So that you're around here, we very rarely get any freezing much more than about 2 or 3 inches unless we get some real extreme weather. So you don't have to go real deep. Ideally, 8 inches would be pretty safe. That way the pipe is never exposed to the freezing temperatures.
So I couldn't just go from that elbow that's coming out of the house now down to 8 inches below. I'd have to come out of the foundation that low.
Well, it works better that way because no matter what you do, any water pipe that's outside is susceptible to freezing temperatures. I mean, you could box it in and insulate it and things like that, which would help. I'm not a big fan of heat tapes and things like that. While they are getting better in quality, generally speaking, they're a pretty inexpensive item, which means that they don't have a lot of quality control. So I really worry about the electricity on some around water and around freezing temperatures.
Yeah,
so I'm not a big fan of wrapping heat tapes.
Well, all right. Thank you.
All right.
All right. We are just about midway through this first hour of Focus 580 with Scott Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. This is our monthly program on home maintenance. So if you have a question, you got a problem, need some advice, give us a call, 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. Just the earlier question about the woman and the ducts, who had the question about the ducts, makes me curious. Are there many alternatives to the traditional sheet metal ductwork that probably most people are used to? Are there many other ways to do it?
Well, there's always several different ways of doing anything. The most common ones that we find around here are either the sheet metal ducts. They also make a product called Ductboard, which is a fiberglass about a half an inch thick with a foil coating on the outside of it, a paper foil facing. And that is a relatively good duct material. The flex ducts, they're quick and easy, and like I say, as long as they're run properly and supported so we don't have a lot of drooping for airflow, they work well, and as long as they're protected from sunlight. Most of the time I get in an attic, we don't have a lot of sunlight issues, but some of the older houses with large windows and the gables and such, we've actually had some UV deterioration. Mm-hmm. And of course, I had the one house that the raccoons managed to find a hole in to the soffit and get in, and they like to chew on the ductwork and use the insulation for nesting, so it kind of made a mess there. But for the most part, they're quick and easy and seem to work fairly well. The sheet metal, it takes a little bit more of an art form to get somebody to be able to bend the sheet metal and get it to fit properly, and it's getting harder and harder to find the quality of people to install something like that. And it does have a lot of air leakage because you end up putting it in short sections, 2 to 4 foot long sections, and you have to crimp all the joint connectors. I've seen a lot of people try and tape all the joints. I will have to say that duct tape does not work on ducts because duct tape is usually falling off within about a year or so after being put on. There are some foil tapes, some metal tapes that work quite well for taping up your ductwork and helping reduce your heat loss or your air loss through the ducts, but duct tape's not one of them.
It sounds like, though, that maybe that's something that you don't need to be real worried about. I suppose it depends upon where the duct is and where your heat losses go.
Exactly. It all depends on how things are done. On a basement situation, heat loss from duct work, other than the fact that we need to be able to move air to the extremities, the farthest rooms from the heat source to help keep them cool or heated. Other than that, we really aren't that much worried about heat loss and air loss. A crawl space, most of the time on crawl spaces these days, we recommend insulating the perimeter walls and the band joist areas so that the crawl space becomes a semi-heated portion of the house. The soil level in the crawl space stays about 50 to 55 degrees pretty much year-round as long as we don't let the cold air from outside in. And so a little bit of heat loss in the crawl space actually doesn't hurt because it helps warm the floors. But if you've got a house that has a lot of air leakage through the crawl space or you don't have insulation, then yes, you can actually be losing quite a bit of heat through the ductwork into the crawl space.
Yeah, okay. Next, let's talk with some more callers, and we have next Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. My wife and I just bought our first house a couple months ago, and so we're new homeowners, and I had a couple questions for you. They may sound really basic, but hopefully they're not too basic and maybe someone else will find them useful. The first has to do with old water damage to the subfloor. We pulled up the carpet in the house and to put in some bamboo flooring. And when we pulled up the carpet, we noticed in two spots. One was the wall adjacent to a bathroom, and the other was the wall adjacent to the chimney. There appeared to be old water damage to the subfloor, but it was dry. And when I contacted the previous owners who had lived in the house for about 30 years, they said they weren't aware of any water damage, and so they thought maybe it had been something that had occurred prior to them buying the house and had been resolved. And so my question is, how do you keep an eye on something like that, before it becomes an obvious problem? In other words, how can you tell if water is leaking?
Well, the only way is to check for dampness. There's a couple of different ways of checking for dampness. The most common one is to put your hand on the carpet or the flooring and see if it's wet.
Okay.
Ideally, the flashing around the chimney should have been repaired when they noticed the problem. It is not completely uncommon for a water leak such as around a chimney flashing or something like that to be relatively minor, and so nobody really notices it, particularly once furniture is put in place and that wall gets covered by a bookcase or something like that. We can also end up with some condensation issues if we don't get air past it from large furniture pieces.
Okay.
Yeah, there's really no good way to sit there and go, okay, this has gotten wet once before, and it was 3 weeks ago. Water stains could have happened during construction. As long as the wood is not delaminated. Usually if plywood is delaminated, it's had water to it for an extended period of time, which has dissolved the glue in the plywoods. If it's water stained, it could have been at any point in time from the time the house was originally constructed to 3 weeks ago. Somebody poured a glass of water down there. The water stain pretty much looks the same.
Okay, I see. Okay, and then another question has to do with the vents into the crawl space, the vents on the outside of the house.
Mm-hmm.
Do you typically keep those covered year-round, or do you open them at certain times of the year and close them at other times? Or?
Well, that kind of depends on your crawl space. Ideally, if the crawl space is dry, you've got a very good vapor barrier, you've got good insulation on the walls, we don't have water coming in there during heavy storms, I would leave them covered pretty much year-round.
Oh, okay.
If you get some dampness in the basement, in the crawl space, some flooding or something, it's not a bad idea to help ventilate the extra moisture out before it comes up into the house.
I see.
Around right now with the humid weather we're having, I would rather not see a crawl space vent open, in that 90% of the houses with crawl spaces have the ductwork for the air conditioner running through the crawl space. And that ductwork, of course, cools off. We get our warm, humid air from a beautiful day such as today going through that vent, and we end up condensing water on the ductwork, and it drips down onto the plastic vapor barrier. Of course, once it's on top of the plastic vapor barrier, it won't soak into the ground, so it has to evaporate, come up into the house. Then your air conditioner has to recondense it and drain it out through the condensate drain. So in warm, humid days like this, keeping the crawl space vents closed is probably more efficient than letting them open up.
Oh, okay. Okay. That's well, that's good to know. That's actually the it's almost counterintuitive for me. I was thinking on the hot days you want to leave it open so it kind of vents out, but what you said makes sense. So, okay, well, thanks for your time and for the show. This is it's always been an interesting show to listen to, and now that I'm a homeowner, I'm sure I'll be I'll be calling in.
All right. Well, thank you.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay, take care.
We'll go on here. Next caller up is in Normal. This is line 4. Hello.
Hello there.
Yes.
Thanks for being there.
Mm-hmm.
I have a problem in the basement. In a corner, there's water that seeps in, and above that, on the main level outside, there is a driveway and a downspout that goes into the driveway. So I don't know who to call to have this problem addressed.
Okay. Just out of curiosity, do you know what kind of tile is going out into the driveway? Do you see like a reddish-brown clay tile, or is it a black plastic tile?
No, I have no idea. When I bought the house, they had already put the second driveway along the side of the house leading to a garage in the back, and it is in that corner that there's moisture in the basement, and I just keep running a dehumidifier, and I get a entire container full of water every day.
Well, that's not unusual. Even in an air conditioner, particularly on a humid day like today, 3 to 5 gallons of water a day is not unusual.
Okay.
Just from the air coming in through the house.
That is wet in that corner.
Okay, I'm going to assume that it's probably a concrete block foundation.
Yes, it is.
Okay, once you get water to the exterior of a concrete block wall, it starts soaking through the concrete. It only has soaked through about an inch of concrete before it finds a hollow core in the center of the block, and it runs down the center core until it gets to the bottom, and it starts accumulating at one of the bottom blocks.
Okay.
Yes, it does sound like the water from the downspout or the water from the driveway is tilted back towards the house.
Yeah.
Oftentimes, you can get a gutter man to re-slope the gutter so that the downspout is at a different place.
Okay.
So that we're not dumping that water right at that corner, either all to one end or low in the middle where we can put a downspout in the middle and drain it away.
You think that might be the first thing to do is get a gutter man rather than a basement person?
Right, because I am a firm believer in taking care of the water before it gets to the basement rather than wait for it to get to the basement and figure out how to pump it out. Water in the basement, in my opinion, is a symptom to a problem, and so correcting the water in the basement is a solution to the symptom, but not necessarily a correction of the problem.
Okay.
So keeping the water away from the concrete block wall is going to be a much better, a much more long-term situation than trying to do something with it once it got into the basement.
Yeah.
Is it a concrete driveway?
No, it's a terrible asphalt driveway, and things grow up in it, like, you know, weeds and so forth. I have to mow my driveway.
Okay.
It's very poorly done, and the asphalt breaks off. And I just I think this might have been a long-standing problem with the house, but I don't know. I mean, before they even put this driveway in.
Well, it's not that uncommon, particularly when you've got a corner. When they built the basement, they had to dig down to put in the footing for the wall.
Right.
They then backfilled it up against the house, and the soil on the exterior was right next to the foundation was loose, so it settled. And if the driveway got put in before the settlement occurred, it'll actually take the driveway and let it settle or slope back towards the house.
Yeah.
And so any water source that's on that side of the house is going to want to run towards the wall. So there again, if you can't
start with a gutter in person, huh?
Yeah. Start with rerouting where that gutter goes, so get it someplace where we can drain it either off the driveway or to the backyard or something where we can get it out and away.
Oh, okay. And if that doesn't work, then what's the next step?
Well, hopefully that does work.
Okay.
Repaving the driveway so that you add an extra inch or so next to the house so it provides a slope away, a much more aggressive slope away from the house will help quite a bit.
Okay.
But, of course, repaving a driveway is an expensive way of doing it. So starting with the gutters is probably the quick and easy.
So that water has to be coming from the surface of the...
My guess is that it's coming from the surface, particularly since it's in the corner where we do have a moisture source.
Yeah.
And you probably have a little bit of mildew or usually a little bit of dirt on the walls kind of going up higher at the corner than it is out from the corner. kind of what I call a pyramid effect.
Yeah, kind of, and also the tiles on the ceiling right above it are wet.
Okay.
Or stained, rather.
Well, that could be a different issue.
Uh-oh.
Because the ceiling tile should be well above the level of the driveway outside. Your driveway should never be up as far as the wood framing, and of course your basement ceiling tiles are connected to the wood framing.
Well, it is higher, but it still has a little staining on the tile, so I presumed that the water had somehow... I'll start with the gutter.
Yeah, it's quite possible at one point in time the gutter downspout had frozen. Since they go down into a tile, if the tile blocks up with some debris, dirt, tree, leaves, whatever, and freezes the water in the downspout freezes and expands. And the way they make the aluminum downspout, it has a seam on the back side. And it's amazing how many times I've found that seam on the back side of the downspout is actually split. So the water is running down the wall, and we end up with damage to the siding and damage around that corner from water coming in from a split downspout seam.
Okay. Thank you so much.
All right. Very good. Thank you. We will continue to talk with folks here and take questions for our guest, Scott Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. He's here once a month on a Monday to talk about home maintenance. We have about 10 minutes left, a little bit more than that. 333-9455 for Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. And now we have a couple of Champaign folks here. Start with line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
We've had a power vent in our attic for the last few years, thermostat controlled, and it recently failed and is no longer available in that particular model. So our roofing contractor came out, and he's suggesting that we consider installing a Ridgemaster vent ridge because he noticed some softness on one side of the ridge line, kind of mushiness. So I have two questions with regard to that. One is, I presume if we decide to go with the Ridgemaster, we really don't want a power vent anymore because it's just going to kind of circulate air right out through the vent. But I don't know. And the second question is, although the Ridgemaster vent ridge sounds like a really good idea in the summer, isn't it going to let a lot of heat escape during the winter?
Okay. A couple things. First of all, the power vent that has failed. If you have adequate ventilation from a ridge vent, such as you're describing, plus a soffit ventilation where air can get in low, the power vent probably is not needed. The biggest issue I have with power vents is they do not operate in the wintertime, which is when we need probably at least as much ventilation. Really, the softness that your roofer noticed in the sheathing is usually due to condensation in an attic area. Well, 9 times out of 10, the moisture does not start in the attic area. Usually there's another moisture source, so like a lack of a vapor barrier in a crawl space or a damp basement or an improperly set power humidifier that provides a high humidity level in the house. The bottom of the roof sheathing being one of the coldest places because it's above the insulation. The cold spots, of course, will condense the moisture. The north side of the roof doesn't get the sunlight exposure, so it stays a little bit colder. So it's quite often that I find the north side of a roof sheathing when looking from the attic is either darkened with a mold or mildew or starting to delaminate from excessive amounts of moisture. Or in extreme cases, we've had water stains in the ceiling on the north side from the frost that condensed and then melted and dripped into the ceiling. So I'm going to agree with the roofer on the ridge vent. I think that's a really good way of ventilating the attic. Surface area or square inch of ventilation-wise, it will probably provide more ventilation than the power vent, even when the power vent is on. As far as it working in the wintertime, it works quite well in the wintertime. The heat that is in the attic is not heating your house. Heat rises. There is a layer of insulation between the living space and the attic. So the heat that is building up in the attic is not radiating down through that insulation into the house. So what we really want is enough ventilation in that attic that any humidity in the house that moves through the insulation does not condense on the bottom of the roof sheathing and create this softness or the mold and mildew that we're looking at.
Okay, so having a cooler than normal attic will not really impact heat loss from the house during the winter then?
Correct. Once you've got 8 to 10 inches of insulation between the living space and the attic, the heat in the attic is not radiating down towards the house.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much.
All right, very good. Line two is next. Champaign. Hello.
Hi. Just have a question. We were over at the Showcase of Homes, and You know, one of the things we liked about the basements they had there were, you know, some nice big open area windows, not necessarily walkout, but nice large egress windows.
Mm-hmm.
And ours aren't like that. And we were wondering what are some of the concerns or issues we might have if we try and, one, either dig out one a little bit more and make it wider and put, you know, kind of like the retaining wall system they had, or even go in on a different part of the house and actually carve out some of that concrete and put in a nice area like that. I mean, we're not talking about putting in a bedroom or anything, so I don't think we really have to, we're not required to do that, but we'd like more light in the area that we're thinking of.
Okay, well, adding a basement window can be done. You're correct that the windows that are most basements have nowadays are egress windows. They're now required by local building practices to install those. So if somebody did want to convert the basement to a sleeping area at some point in time, there was a secondary egress from the sleeping area that way, so that there's not only an emergency way out, but also a way for emergency personnel to get in if something were to happen on a house fire or something like that.
Okay.
It can be done. If you've got a poured concrete basement, it's a little bit more difficult. You've got to get a concrete saw and cut the concrete out. Concrete blocks, you can use. You have to saw as well, but usually they're a lot easier to get out.
Okay.
But there's no reason why you can't. The only issue is going to be how do we keep water from coming back in that window
right.
well?
Because right now we're in pretty good shape. We don't get water in the basement right now, so we don't want to cause another problem on top of it.
Well, putting in a window well or some of these decorative stone retaining walls, as long as things are built up so that the window well or the retaining wall is higher and the soil level slopes away from it, you should be in pretty good shape.
Okay. Okay, so just maintaining the grading, because we've got really good grading right now. So it's just a matter of maintaining that around any retaining wall or anything like that that we would put in there.
Yeah, that's correct. Very, very rarely do you ever get any water coming through a window from the amount of rain.
That was the other concern I had. Okay.
The amount of rain we have here landing in a window well should not be enough to fill the window well. What usually fills a window well and lets water in is if other grading around the house slopes back towards the window well.
Okay.
So we end up with a 5 or 6 foot long section of the yard sloping back towards the window well. Yes, we can fill it. But as long as you maintain the good grading, it should not fill.
Okay, great. Well, wonderful. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. And next caller is in Urbana. This is line number 3. Hello.
Yes, hello.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question. It's really on behalf of my niece and her husband. They have a problem with moss on the north side of their roof. And they were told by some folks that you can damage that they should be careful how to remove the moss because they could damage the shingles. The shingles, you know, they kind of looked under the moss some, and the shingles seem fine, but they're trying to figure out a safe way to remove that moss. And then a way to prevent it, you know, I don't heard zinc strips can be effective in preventing the buildup of the moss. So just wondered what advice you'd have for them.
Okay, what kind of shingles are we referring to?
I think they're just the standard
asphalt shingle.
Mm-hmm.
So basically what we've got is a lot of shade in that particular area, probably some trees that are really close. It's leaving enough debris. The moss itself will not grow on the shingles. Asphalt is not a good fertilizer.
Okay.
So apparently there's been some dirt or something that's gotten on the shingles that has allowed the – and usually it's tree debris that has allowed the moss to start growing.
Uh-huh.
Spraying it down with some type of herbicide, algicide, even a herbicide from farm chemicals will usually take care of it.
Is something like Roundup pretty good?
Right, Roundup 2,4-D, which I don't think is available anymore. They had a product called Triox, which I believe is now called All Clear. You do have to watch that you don't put so much up there that it washes down your downspouts and kills your yard down the corners of the yard.
Right.
But something like that will prevent it. Don't do any power washing. When it's hot, warm, wet, whatever. Well, you don't want to do much walking on those shingles. The zinc strip that you suggested does work quite well. They make a couple of different products, Shingle Saver, things like that. We have just enough acidity in our rain around here to be able to wash down a little bit of the metal from the strips, a little bit of oxidation, and that will usually help reduce or prevent the growth of the moss and the mildew.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But generally, there's got to be some dirt there because, like I say, the shingles themselves will not usually grow anything. But if you've got a particularly big trees, sycamore trees are one of the worst ones because they've got kind of a fuzz that they let off of the leaves early in the spring. And that fuzz is enough to collect on the shingles and give a fertilizer for the moss to grow in.
So another prevention might be just kind of trying to keep the tree debris swept off?
Keep the trees trimmed back. My favorite rule of thumb is if you can reach it from the roof, it's too close.
Mm.
That way you can get a lot of ventilation. We don't get the tree branches full of ice and the ice storms during the winter and scratch the shingles, things like that. So
okay.
If walking on the roof, you can reach the tree, it's probably too close.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks a lot.
All right. Very good. Next, we'll talk with somebody in Champaign. This is line one. Hello.
Yes. I had some... exterminator people who were trying to sell me on something they do as a sideline, I guess, which is installing these bimetallic strip-operated vents for the crawl space. And I'm wondering what you thought of those.
I can't say that I'm real fond of those.
And why is that?
They're a bimetallic strip, so they open up in heat.
Right.
We're not concerned with heat in the crawl space. We're worried about moisture in the crawl space.
Uh-huh.
What happens is those bimetallic vents open up in the summertime when we have a really hot, humid day. The hot, humid air from outside goes into the crawl space and collects on your air conditioning ducts.
Well, I heard your comment on that earlier, but for my case, I don't have air conditioning ducts in the crawl space. They're in the attic. So do you think it would apply that I would make good use of those still or not?
Well, okay. How well do you have your crawl space insulated, and is there a vapor barrier?
There is a vapor barrier. I wouldn't say it's a particularly good one. It was installed over 30 years ago, but it's there. And as far as insulation is concerned, I really don't know. The insulation you're talking about would be on the outside, some kind of styrofoam, right?
It would be on the exterior walls, but on the inside of the crawl space.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, in that case, I guess there is no insulation in the crawl space.
Okay. Well, rather than see that what they're trying to do by putting in their vents is they're trying to keep any moisture in the crawl space ventilated out.
Right.
Okay. Again, like our basement issue earlier, I figure water in the crawl space is a symptom of a problem, not the real problem.
Yeah.
We need to keep the water from getting in the crawl space. So doing a little bit of grading on the exterior of the house, downspouts, keeping the crawl space dry. Once the crawl space is dry, we don't need to be opening and closing those crawl space vents.
Okay. Well, my crawl spaces are fairly dry. When you go in there, it smells a little musty, but I wouldn't say they were either one of them is wet. By any means, they seem fairly dry. It's just that I think there's humidity that gets built up in there because it's just a little cooler than elsewhere in the.
That's it exactly. The crawl space, the soil in the crawl space will stay about 55 degrees.
Right.
So therefore, it makes the crawl space a cool spot.
Yeah.
And of course, when we have a high humidity, that moisture will condense on the first cool surface.
Yeah,
so
right.
A crawl space is known for being damper because of the amount of moisture that can condense.
Yeah.
So the last thing I want to do when it's 92 degrees and 92% humidity is to open the vents and let the air in.
So you're just letting that much more humidity in.
You're just letting that much more humidity in. I would much rather see you make sure you've got a good vapor barrier. It's not all torn up. It's not cracked and split. Put 2 inches of polystyrene foam board on the foundation walls, and then put some fiberglass, unfaced fiberglass, in other words, no paper backing, up in the band joist areas.
I see.
And by doing that, what you do is you insulate your perimeter walls. You now have this 55-degree crawl space area, which actually can act as a heat sink and help absorb some of the heat from the house so that it reduces your cooling load.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the wintertime, it's 55 degrees is warm enough to where it doesn't let your floors get really cold, where if you had open crawl space vents, the cold air from outside would be circulating the crawl space, and you end up with colder floors.
So you're recommending keeping it closed in the wintertime as well?
Oh, definitely. You want to keep all crawl space vents closed in the wintertime no matter what. We don't want to have any cold air down there freezing any of your water pipes or anything like that.
Yeah, right. Yeah, of course. Yeah, okay.
But, if you can get the crawl space dry, nine times out of ten, particularly in this area, that's a matter of downspout extensions and grading, a good vapor barrier, and a good insulation on the walls and band joist area.
Okay. What did you call it, band joist?
Yeah, that would be the wood framing portion.
You mean the space between the joists?
Yes.
Okay, well, that's another question, I guess. The previous owners put some insulation in there in one of the crawl spaces, but they did it wrong. They used paper-backed insulation, and they put it with the paper side down instead of up. You said to use unfaced insulation in there. I'm wondering if it's be possible to just pull off the paper from the insulation that's already there.
Yes, it is. The paper comes off or perforates fairly easily.
Okay.
The reason I say we want an unfaced is we don't want to stop all airflow. While we don't want to have a lot of air movement, the band joist area is one of the coldest spots on the house. And when you have a cold spot, of course, we can get condensation. If we get some moisture on that band joist, we don't want to trap that moisture there. So we need to let it move back through.
Well, wait a minute. What you call the band joist, is that the skirting joist around the outside?
Yes.
Oh, okay. And that's the only part you want to see insulated? Not between the floor joists.
Not between the floor joists, no.
Okay, all right. Well, when I was talking about between the floor joists that they insulated, so that insulation between the floor joists should just come out, right?
Depending on your heating system, you said something about everything being in the attic.
I have hot water heating.
Okay.
Air conditioning in the attic.
Yeah, then I would not insulate between the floor joists. No, I would insulate the band joist or the skirt and the walls only.
Okay, all right. So, and that's just because that's part of the exterior wall.
Correct.
Okay, all right. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. And just we're just about at the end here, but just to make sure that people understand, also you're recommending when you're talking about dealing with moisture problems in a crawl space, you recommend that people put plastic sheeting down on the surface of the dirt in the crawl space.
And the soil, preferably without any gravel or anything down on top of it, ballasting it down. That way, if there's ever any flooding, the plastic can float and the water's underneath it. And, that'll keep that crawl space in the house much drier.
Yeah, so you don't want moisture evaporating through that naked soil there and then coming up into the house. You want to have something on top of that that will hold it, trap that moisture in between that plastic sheet and the soil.
Correct. A dusty, dry crawl space is still evaporating several gallons a day of water up into the house. So you take a dusty, dry crawl space and throw a piece of Visqueen down over the top of it, and within a matter of 20 to 30 minutes, you'll have water condensation. So, yeah, it's coming up out of the ground, even though it looks dry.
All right. Scott Spies with the Spies Home Inspection Service here every month to do the show. Thanks very much.
Well, thank you, David. My hour keeps going by quicker and quicker as we do this.